It's been quite a while since the Senate actually did base budget reviews, and during the time that I've chaired this division, we've been pretty much under siege because of budget deficits, and hard enough to deal with all of that without going into the base budget. So no way are we picking on the Veterans Homes Board by doing a base budget review here. We're going to be doing it for the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services and others as well. And we're going to start with that today. And I thought maybe it would take about an hour. And then we're going to have a discussion about the Minneapolis home inspection in late November. They did not have a very good inspection again. And we did give some resources last year to try to improve the situation. And so we want to review what's going on with that. And so that's kind of how I see the meeting going today. So let's begin with the base budget review. And we have documents here.
Jen's in the file folder.
We have documents here that have been provided by the Veterans Homes Board. And we'll begin by having the Veterans Home Board Chair, Jeff Johnson, introduce himself and the people he's brought with him.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I guess I look at that as an opportunity not only to talk about the budget, but also give an update on our Minneapolis home. With me today, we've got quite a few members of our team at the table here with myself, and the presenter for our budget is Larry Greenberg, board member. He is the finance chair of our finance committee. Our vice chair, Dan Williams. I also have other board members. Do you want me to introduce everybody quick now or not?
That's fine.
Okay.
You can do that.
Sandy Larson is our PR and legislative rep. We have our director of finance for the agency, Doug Rickenbaugh, board member Byron Opstead, board member Dean Ashman, who's also the chair of our special review committee, by Wagner behind me, and some of our new management team in Minneapolis, Margaret Sukraj, Harold Gilbertson, who we'll introduce later again, Pam Barrels hiding behind the pillar, Nancy Dahl is with our agency. She's our HR person for the agency, our new administrator, and a good catch as far as we're concerned, Bob Wicken, out at our Minneapolis home. New assistant administrator, Minneapolis home. We've asked that entire team to be here for the other part of this presentation. Jim Ingersoll, our current interim executive director, Chip Cox, who is also the administrator out at Hastings, our home in Hastings. And Ed Anderson, our finance director out at Minneapolis, who's also a new member to the team out there. And, of course, as always, our major thanks, the veterans organizations are strong contributors, volunteers, and supporters of that entire system. So I believe we have a number of the commanders, Commander Cox from the Legion, Jerry Kaiser, who represents the UVLC, is their current president or chair of that. Bill Rooley, I'm sorry, a board member. Bill's also on the finance committee. Mikey P., Jim Hesselgrave, other members there. So we're trying to build the bridges and develop the team that we can move this forward. I'm anxious for Mr. Greenberg to give his presentation on our actual budget, the process this year, and Mr. Greenberg will get into that process a little bit. It's been a lot different for each one of our homes. So with that, I'd like to turn it over, if I may, ma'am, to Mr. Greenberg, the chair of our finance committee.
And I'd just like to say welcome to everyone who's come to the hearing today. And I'd just like to remind you, if you are coming up at a later point in time to testify, we'd like you to repeat your name and your title for the tape that we're running on the meeting. Okay, Mr. Greenberg.
Good morning. My name is Larry Greenberg. I'm a board member from St. Louis Park, Minnesota. I'm very happy to be here this morning and to do this presentation for you. It'll be fairly brief. You've got the written material in front of you. I'll be glad to take any questions that you have after I've been through the slides. The budget process started with the concept that we needed to start with what we needed. We then had to pare down what we needed, as every agency does, down to the base budget that we have been allocated by the legislature. We directed studies to identify potential areas of cost savings where the data clearly confirmed cost-saving actions have been initiated that do not reduce the quality of care or the quality of life for our vulnerable veterans populations. An outside consultant was engaged to prepare a benchmark study for comparable nursing homes in Minnesota to provide baselines and to compare the cost effectiveness of the veterans home operations as against the private sector. The administrators were asked to then provide optimized budgets and lists of possible budget cuts, emphasizing the minimizing of impacts on patient care, and to provide detailed descriptions of the consequences of each reduction. The reports will be prepared for presentation to state officials, the governor's office, to the legislature, outlining the consequences of these budget reductions, together with other alternatives and requests for additional funding to restore these reductions. We were mandated by the Department of Finance as to the kinds of inflation expectations that we should have, and we have followed that those instructions. We started with our operating base budgets, and these are after the elimination of those items which our administrators believe can be cut to get us down to the base budget, and you see them in front of you. We've compared fiscal year 06, 07 as against our budgets for 08 and 09. As you can see, the total budget that we used in 06 came to $64,103,000, roughly. Our estimate for how 07 is going to turn out, because, of course, we've still got six more months to go, looks like it will be approximately $68,221,000. The expectation at the present time is that we will have sufficient resources available to just fund that budget. We do not anticipate that there will be any shortfall during 07.
Mr. Freeman, could I just interrupt you to ask a question for a minute here? The projections that you're using on resident care salaries of 3.25 and 3.25, and then your other costs at 1.9 and 2, would that mean then that you would be looking at giving raises to your staff in different amounts? Or
These numbers are the numbers that were issued by the Department of Finance as a guideline in preparing budgets for the coming year as to the inflation that we should expect in existing costs. They don't have anything to do with actual costs. In other words, those numbers don't anticipate changes in staffing or changes in anything except changes in cost pressures. In other words, these are simple inflation guidance, which is all it was. The Department of Finance issues to every agency expectations with regard to inflation to be expected in their existing costs.
Well, I guess really my question probably should be directed at them. I don't know if there's anyone here from the Department of Finance. Greg Weber is here.
Craig.
Madam Chair, Craig Weber, Department of Finance.
Thank you.
Just to clarify on what Mr. Greenberg was saying, when the Department of Finance issues its budget instructions every year for agencies to put together their base budget and budget requests, we give them a guideline in terms of what they should be expecting for salary increases for wage settlements, union. After the whole bargaining process goes forward, the 3.25% guideline was the assumption that we told agencies to make for the upcoming increases in compensation costs for 08 and 09.
But this is broken into two parts, resident care and salaries, and then other costs. Are the other costs having to do with building maintenance then, or they don't have anything to do with any of the personnel? Or
that's correct, Madam Chair. The 3.25 was for compensation-related staffing costs only, and the rest were for everything else, essentially. And these were just guidelines. These were not agencies could budget more. They could do less if they had circumstances. And so, like I said, we're trying to give agencies a clear guideline as to how to go forward, because otherwise we'd have assumptions all over the board, and we're trying to give them.
I understand that. I'm just trying to understand the difference here.
It's,
and so the resident care portion that's not connected with salaries would be like for dietary or
Madam Chair,
supplies or...
Madam Chair, our guidelines for the 3.25% was compensation related only. Whether the agency is classifying that as part of resident care, that's up to them. But we didn't specify a portion for resident care. The only thing our budget instruction specified was for salaries and non-salary related costs.
Okay, thank you very much.
We should also understand that in our base budget, we're constrained by having an aggregate amount of funds that have been allocated to us in our base budget, as every agency is. The distribution of those funds over the broad categories of salaries and costs, and of course, as you understand, one of our major costs happens to be pharmaceuticals, which we pay for, and all of those costs have to be allocated among these various items to come to only the balanced budget. We're not, in this presentation, we're not talking about what we would like to have or
no,
what
I
we
understand
believe
that.
We need.
You will have another opportunity to do that later.
Okay. I just wanted to make that clear because as we get to this next slide, you'll note in this next slide that we're anticipating that for the budget year fiscal 2008, our numbers are a little smaller than they were in 2007. The reason for that is that the amount allocated to us by the legislature was $68,152,000, which is less than what we actually will spend in 2007. And that's a problem that we'll have to deal with the next time we're here to talk to you. But in the meantime, we've done this distribution in the best way that we possibly could. And for historical reference, I've included a slide that shows everything from 2001 and the progression of the actual revenues and expenses and the differences. We have had over the years varying results at the legislature and through the operations. And during 2002, 3, and 4, we actually did not spend all the money that we had allocated to us and thus carried it forward and used it in the following year each time. However, that stopped after 2004, and in 2005, we started having costs that exceeded the amounts available to us, and we have now spent down, and at the end of 2007, there is no surplus whatsoever. We are hopeful that if we can manage the rest of the 6 months in the appropriate fashion, that we will come out exactly even, which would be a wonderful trick, and we certainly hope that it will be that way, because we don't want to have to come back to you again and ask for money.
And Mr. Greenberg, just
certainly,
while we're on this, maybe you've got it in here later, but your revenue streams are not just from the state government.
They are not, and there is a slide
okay.
coming up next, I believe.
All right.
There's one thing of note on this slide that I think is very important for you to understand. The term repair and betterment is really the major maintenance of the buildings. The problem we have had is that we have had no funds for repair and betterment since 2004. That's created a terrible situation. We tried to correct it last year, where we had the good fortune of getting some money back from the federal government. We got almost $12 million back. You may remember this. The legislature, in their wisdom, granted us $2,200,000 out of that money that we got back from the federal government to use for repairs and betterments. Unfortunately, the way the request was drafted, it conflicted with another bill that was passed that gave some definitions to what could be repairs and betterments. And that came, I believe, out of the Department of Administration. The result was that when we went to try to spend $2,200,000 to do needed facility repairs in our buildings, we found that we were told we could not spend it for that because the legislation was not drawn in conformity with the other legislation, with the definitions. So we have stuck in limbo $2,200,000 worth of very badly needed money that has been allocated to us by the legislature and we can't spend. We are hopeful that that'll be corrected shortly.
Mr. Greenberg, are you going to have some legislation to correct that situation?
Yes, we are. We're going to have legislation, hopefully very shortly, to correct the $2,200,000 problem. And the governor, in his veterans announcement the other day, included $8 million for 8 and 9, for 08 and 09, which will be a wonderful thing for us. You understand we're dealing with buildings that are over 100 years old.
Yes,
I know. And that money has been recommended by the governor already, and hopefully it'll come through the legislature. But the $2,200,000 is money that we need now. The $8 million we can't spend until after July. The $2,200,000 we could spend tomorrow if we could get the legislature to approve it. Hopefully that bill will be here shortly. It's, I understand, being drafted. Let me skip for a moment to the question that you asked before. Where does our revenue come from? Revenue comes basically from three sources. State appropriation, of course, $75 million for the biennium that we are enacted by the legislature in 2006. In addition to that, we get per diem from the Veterans Administration based on various criteria of the VA as to support for veterans in nursing homes. That, for the per diem, we believe will amount to over $31 million. In addition to that, those veterans who have resources, who are capable of paying for their maintenance, also are required to contribute. We have a set of criteria which is very similar to the criteria used by Medicaid and Medicare for patient payments. Our rules are somewhat more liberal than the Medicaid rules, but they're still tough enough so that we get over $30 million, or expect to get over $30 million from our residents as their contribution to their maintenance and care, which gives us our total of $138,121,000 expected, assuming that the state appropriation doesn't change. Now, let me go back, if I might, to the budget process highlights. I told you before that we had asked our administrators to go through and to reduce their requested budgets, what they thought was necessary to properly run the homes, to reduce that in areas that would not have major impact, or at least we hoped would not have major impact on patient care, and yet would get us to live within our base budget. Unfortunately, what that amounts to is going to be an elimination of additional direct care salaried positions, not insignificant in amount. A reduction in nursing supervisory oversight positions, again, not in a small amount. We would eliminate chaplaincy service, which we currently provide at some substantial cost. We would eliminate free dental care for residents. Other than the initial and annual examinations that are required by law, eligible residents can still rely on the VA and on the State Soldiers Assistance Program for those who can't afford their own care. We would have to reduce contracted security services in Minneapolis. We would have to restructure our pharmacy, which basically would use contracted vendor rather than employees. We would have to reduce the occupational speech and physical therapy staff services. We would have to increase the ratio of staff to resident in social services from 1 to 50 to 1 to 80. We have to comply with VA requirements. And we would, unfortunately, have to eliminate the resident work therapy safe transitions programming that we currently use with our domiciliary residents to attempt to begin to train them to work, to get back into the community in a safe and effective and productive way. That program would have to be eliminated. These are items that we list with great reluctance. They are quality of care issues no matter how you slice it, and that's going to be the core of what we'll be talking about when we get to budgeting. But I want you to understand how we got back to our base budget. Did you have a question? I'm sorry.
Mr. Greenberg, I'm wondering, when you say eliminate additional direct care salaried positions and reduce nursing supervisory oversight positions.
That's correct.
Exactly what do you mean by that? How many positions are you talking about, and in which areas of your facilities are you talking about those reductions? And the reductions over what you have previously had?
Over what we have this year, yes.
Or what you have this year,
yes.
Okay.
These are jobs that are currently in place that would have to be eliminated. They basically, where we started was with the recommendations of the consultants we had last year, who recommended increasing the amount of nursing care, the amount of supervision, and health dimension, the health dimensions report that I think you've seen before. In that report, they recommended substantial increases in those areas, and we did, in fact, implement those recommendations. Our problem is we don't have the money to pay for them. We'd love to have them, but without money to pay the paycheck, I don't know what you do. So,
well, the reason I'm asking the question and I'm a little concerned about it is last year you came in and requested, and after much haggling with the House, we got you additional positions in the direct care area.
That's correct.
And so what I'm trying to figure out now is if you're telling me on this budget process highlight sheet that you're going to have to cut those increased positions that we gave you out again.
Unless we get additional funds. You gave it to us for 06 and 07, and we spent it.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we not only spent that, we diverted $500,000 from other areas of our budget to personnel.
So what you're trying to tell us is that the problem you have is that increase was not in your base.
That's correct.
Okay.
The difficulty we had, we took from you roughly $4,200,000, which we were very happy about, obviously. We were able to we think, do a lot with it. We then went out and spent $4,600,000, over $4,600,000 in nursing care. We basically diverted over $400,000 from other areas of our operations into nursing care. We make no apologies for doing that.
Reason that I'm having a little trouble tracking with you is because what we're trying to do is understand the base budget. And what you're trying to do is to tell us that we gave you some money, but it was one time, it's not in the base. And if it's not restored to the base, then you would have to cut out the positions that we gave you money to increase.
Exactly.
During the last session of
exactly.
the legislature. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Coring?
I have a question.
Sure.
I'm not exactly sure if this is, I think this is, I'm trying to figure out when is the right time to ask this question. And being that you're talking about cutting things, I'm just, I've been doing a little research on your veterans nursing homes. And in reading this, it says here that one of the critical cost drivers for caring for veterans is diabetes. Is that correct?
I believe so. And
it says here the average cost to treat a veteran's diabetic wound is $36,000. And I'm just wondering, in looking at all this, it seems like there's a huge amount of money being spent to treat wounds. It says, I've got some statistics here that says the average cost of surgery is $25,000. The average cost of amputation is $50,000. Prosthetic costs follow. It's about $10,000 to $100,000. And so it appears that you're kind of cutting back on a lot of things. There, and in reading this material that I've acquired here, there is a technology, and I believe it's called pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. It's for wounds. Are you aware of that?
You're not. I'm a financial guy.
Okay.
I have to talk to the technical people about care.
If we can just kind of focus back on the question that I asked you, because in looking at the tracking sheet, the money we gave you was not one-time money. It's in the base.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Okay.
Part of the elimination on those additional direct care salaries were recommendations that were made, but they were just recommendations. So some of those funds are actually... Some of the recommendations, for example, I'll use Laverne. This is system-wide with the agency that they perhaps needed some additional staff in two of the wings. In the review that by the administrator and the personnel there, that was one of those options that may not have necessarily been needed when there was a thorough look at the acuity levels and whatever. So when we look at the elimination or of additional direct care and the reduction in some of the new supervising oversight, not all that is actually elimination of current positions, but not filling positions
okay,
that we would like to.
Okay, so I think that really is a little bit misleading. Then what we need to say is not creating new positions that may be needed rather than eliminating existing positions.
But, Madam Chair, some of it would be with through some of the program changes or whatever, elimination of some of the positions, and that would hope, you know, be through attrition. I don't want anybody to think that we're just going to have a blanket layoff.
Right, but I think the concern is whether the positions are needed, and if they are needed, then kind of we're going backwards from where we were trying to go last year.
And that's hopefully where, when we come back, and Mr. Greenberg, and with the next part of this budget, and the statistics and the numbers can show where that's actually needed as we try and get the approval or the backing of what's truly needed in the budget. Is that fair, Ms. Greenberg?
Yeah. The problem has to do not with the base budget. It has to do with inflation and rising costs. Just nothing we could do about it.
Okay, well, I'm not trying to say that what you're telling us isn't correct. I'm trying to tell you that I don't understand it. We gave you more money for nursing staff last year. It's in
which
the base,
we spent.
In the base budget on the tracking.
Which we spent.
Which you spent. Now, the Department of Administration is saying for planning purposes, you should be planning for a 3.25% rate of inflation each year of the future bienniums.
That's correct.
So I don't understand where that gets you less than you have now.
Well, the problem is that if we weren't constrained by a base budget, you'd be absolutely right.
So you're trying to tell us that this 3.25% guideline is what you should plan for increasing salaries, but you're not guaranteed the money.
That's correct.
To pay for that increase, so you're going to have to eat that out of your existing
exactly
funds, which means the only way normally people can do that is to lay off staff.
Exactly. The problem has to do with the The problem has to do with the fact that the inflation number applies to costs, not to revenues.
I understand now. I think, does everyone else understand? Okay. So when they told you to use this guideline, they didn't give you any indication that they would be using that guideline in terms of providing future funding increases?
No, I can't speak for the finance department, but I think their concern is that the revenues are the prerogative of the legislature, not the finance department.
Well, but they do make recommendations.
Yes, I understand that, and I'm told that you will be getting a recommendation shortly.
All right, thank you. Let's continue.
Okay. One of the important issues that I want to make sure that we note is that in the revenue numbers that we showed you before, there are two numbers that don't relate to the legislation, to the legislature. One is the VA per diem. We've used a 3% estimated increase in October 2007 and 2008 in the per diem payments. That's a variance of over $1 million in each of those years. The history of the VA decisions with regard to increases are that in 2005 and 2006, they increased 6.8%, which was wonderful. However, 2003 and 2004, they only increased 2.7%, and in 97, it was only 0.7. So there is some risk in our using the 3% estimate. As far as resident payments are concerned, that's even worse in terms of uncertainty. We've estimated that there'll be a 2% increase per year in 08 and 09 in the amount that we get from resident contributions. That's over $600,000 variance from the previous years. The history is that in 2005, actually resident payments decreased by over 3%. In 2006, they increased by 3%, and in 2007, they're going to decrease again in 2007. So there is a risk in the 2% increase that we've used, and those risks affect our bottom line, regardless of what the legislature does. So we do have to be very careful in terms of what we ask for and in what we get. Now I'll be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may.
Mr. Johnson.
I'm sure there's some questions, but if I may, please. Senator Corning.
Yes, sir.
On the information that you've got there, is with those expenses, and not to be confused, and sometimes we are, with the VA hospital system, which we utilize for the care of the residents, mm-hmm. but that those expense doesn't necessarily come out of our budget. Being the veteran service officer back in Jackson County, that I just sounded more like VA hospital federal system expenses. I don't know. I haven't seen the information.
Okay, Madam Chair. So if a veteran is in your nursing home and he or she has a bed sore and it's not being healed, would that be under your nursing home?
The additional care that would be required when they come back to the home and the long-term expense of that would become part of their care, yes.
And that would become part of your care?
Correct.
Yeah, and your budget. And so my question is I don't know if you've received this, but I actually have a book here from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they're talking about this and the cost that's associated with these wounds. And the fact that if you don't get them healed in a timely manner, it becomes a tremendous cost. So I'm wondering if you're aware of this and if you're aware of the technology and if you're going to be implementing that or if you need the money to implement that. Are you aware of that?
Madam Chair, when we get into revisiting the Minneapolis, there are some equipment things that we will discuss there. And that's where it's the governor's announcement on his veteran initiative for this year, not only for just the veterans home, but the entire package, that the monies that are going to be made available, if it is approved, to the veterans homes would be just phenomenal in some of the things that we can do. We do want, and we will, find a way. We have people within the veterans organizations, as I mentioned earlier, that are strong contributors to some of the important things that we need in our facilities. Because there's some equipment I think we can truly make more readily available to our staff that will assist them in the betterment and the residents' care.
And, Madam Chair, if I could Senator just say Corrine. That I'd like to have somebody from your office come over to my office, and I'd like to work with you to see how we're going to figure out to pay for this stuff, because in reading all this, and I haven't read all of it yet, but that this technology actually, if we implement this, we're actually going to save money in the long run, and I think that's what we all want to do. And so I guess I want to make sure that you have the resources from us so that you can take care of these veterans with the care that I think that they deserve.
We appreciate that very much, Madam Chair, Senator Corning. We would be more than happy to come. You know, we've tried to, and over time, become very transparent, make ourselves readily available to any agency, any organization that would like us to come and discuss. So I would enjoy that opportunity. I will try and get from Mr. Kleinglass, who's the CEO at the VA Minneapolis Hospital, the same documents you have, so that we can really make sure we're comparing the apples to apples. I mean, we deal with a lot of veterans with type 2 diabetes. That's a presumptive disease with the Vietnam vets. So if they're looking for the long-term cost of that care, it's going to be a mix of many different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Oh, yes.
Dan Williams, Vice Chair of the Veterans Home Board. Madam Chair, Senator Corning, when that meeting is set up, with your permission and permission of the Chair, we'll have Carol Gilbertson, who is one of our associate administrators, very familiar with what you're talking about, to lead our team in meeting with you.
Great. That sounds great.
Madam Chair and Senator, one comment with regard to the current situation and relates to the future situation. The acquisition of equipment for improvement of the care of our veteran population is something that's very high in terms of visibility at the board level and at the administrative level. With the kind of financial constraints that we have had this past year, we've actually been unable to make the kind of changes that you're suggesting of equipment changes. There are several different systems, particularly relating to bladder care and things of that sort, that are very high priority items because they're quality of life issues as well as health issues. They're just plain old-fashioned quality of life issues. And there is equipment that would help us with that that, frankly, we don't have the budget to afford. Hopefully, we'll be able to rectify that with this next budget cycle. And, you know, everybody's assistance with that will be helpful.
And, members, you need to remember that, you know, we've been through 5 years now of deficits and 4 years of giving the state agencies no inflation. And so just a little discussion we had about how inflation would eat up money that was given for nursing increases in 1 year, that's been going on for 4 years, really, within the Veterans Homes
Board. Madam Chair, if I could just make one final comment, is that as we saw last night with President Bush sending even more troops to Iraq and extending the service of some of our other men and women, this country and this state has made a commitment to these people, and I don't feel like we're following through with it. These people are putting their lives on the line, and their families are paying the cost of their service too. And we got to step up to the plate and follow through with our commitment. We've made commitments to these people, and damn it, we're not following through with it. I want to work with you to make sure that we're following through with that commitment.
Thank you.
Now, maybe we can just get back to the base budget here for a minute.
Sure.
You gave us an outline of how the various categories of expenditures break down across all the vets' homes system-wide.
Yes.
And I guess the question that I have is whether each home is allocated the same proportion of that money based on their residence or how you decide how to set each home's budget.
Well, the way each of the homes is budgeted is that each of the administrators in each home prepares a budget for their needs, taking into account the residents, the resident count that they have, taking into account what they need in order to provide the highest possible care, highest possible quality of care to each of those residents. They then submit those budget requests to central administration. They're gone through very carefully to make sure that we eliminate duplication, to make sure that we eliminate those things that may not be necessary. And then the budgets are all aggregated. So we don't take the money from the top and divide it up and say, this is how much you have. We start by saying, what do you need? And then we look at how that compares to what we have available. Then we go back to each of the administrators and say, okay, what can you do without? What is the least painful in terms of quality of care, of servicing capability? What is the least impact you can have and take money out of the budget? We look at those lists when they come back, and we try to prioritize and then come down to a final number that agrees with what we have available. The concept of going the other direction wouldn't work. In other words, we couldn't.
I guess I didn't really ask the question properly. I guess maybe what I'm looking for is, you know, do you have a standard that you look at in terms of nursing staff ratio per patient?
Yes.
And maybe you deviate in one home a little bit more than another, or you don't, based on certain considerations.
Madam Chair, we can, if we can, I call upon one of our human resource, or perhaps even Chip Cox, our interim executive director, to answer that question. They could probably put it in better
terms.
Sure,
and, you know, same would go with dietary. Is it generally, you know, there's a ballpark amount per meal per resident?
Madam Chair, as I had mentioned earlier, and I was wanting for you to, this whole committee, to see that the budget structure and the committee structure with that finance committee, the administrators and their staff were truly put through a normal exercise with the budget and then coming back to the finance committee to discuss those things. So if I may, I'd like to call upon our interim director, who's been with our system probably the longest, long term, to answer that question if I can. Mr. Cox?
While Chip is coming up here, one of the things that you need to know about, and we alluded to it at the beginning of this presentation, is the question of benchmarks. We were very concerned about the efficiency of operations, considering the limited funds that we had, and yet we're overly concerned about quality of care. So we commissioned a consulting firm to do what was called a benchmark study. That benchmark study involved, they're looking at well over 100 privately run nursing homes in Minnesota to give us benchmarks as to what those homes do about staffing and all of the other elements of care, all of the staffing ratios, all of the financial ratios, all of the statistical information that could be helpful to us. We received that study at the end of last year, and we've undertaken a rather extended project of looking at our homes as compared to those benchmarks, as to where we are higher, where we are lower, where we compare favorably and where we don't compare favorably, to determine why we don't compare favorably, and if there are reasons to be able to explain them, and if there are no reasons to figure out how to fix it. One of the things that we have determined through these studies is that, frankly, in terms of some of these ratios, we compare rather favorably, peculiarly enough, against private nursing homes in the state. As a matter of fact, in nursing homes with 200 residents or more, out of the, I've forgotten the exact number, 30 or so, with over 200 beds. In terms of registered nurses, we are second in terms of the quantity of hours per nursing hours per or registered nursing hours per resident day. We rate no worse than seventh in all patient care ratios. So we don't really think we have much to apologize for in terms of our staffing ratios at the present time. That doesn't look forward, unfortunately. That looks back. And what we're worried about right now is looking forward.
I think what we need to request from you is a breakdown of your budget by home. And then if you can also give us your average daily census in each of your homes, then we could kind of compare or look at it and understand how this is broken down better.
Yeah, we can provide that to you.
Okay. Yes, Senator Lurie.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would very much like to see that study that you said you received
Certainly.
At the end of last year that compared you to the privates. I mean, one of the things that we face in my district, a very rural district, most of the I-35 corridor between Duluth and the Twin Cities, is there's nothing in our region. Most of our vets would have to travel over 100 miles to get to one of these homes. And I don't know if you guys have any plans to try to make these more accessible to vets and their families or some type of service that, you know.
Well, Senator Lurie, I think most of us would like to see the Veterans Home Board kind of move into the 20th century with the rest of the long-term care community in providing more community-based care.
Mm-hmm.
And because the actual care in a nursing home is so expensive and generally by most people's standards today is not as desirable if the care can be provided in the community. So, things like adult daycare centers, things like home nurse visiting programs, things like that, it's kind of the direction that we've been kind of encouraging them to think about, which, of course, is a lot easier than people don't have to travel so far.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Johnson.
Senator, the part of our master planning process, of course, does look at some of the different areas. We did a demographic study years ago as far as there's needs throughout the entire state. There's no disagreement. Hastings, we're looking at the possibility of some assisted living. You know, we've run into some things there that the need is truly there, but it needs to be a veteran population, so we run into some things there. So part of our master planning is to look at some daycare opportunities, some assisted living opportunities in the current homes. The VA healthcare system, that big thick manual over there, depending on the service-connected disability that a veteran may have, they have to reach a certain percent, and don't hold me to a percentage right now, but it's over the 50% mark. The VA itself will provide for some of that home-based care as part of their initiative for the better health care for the veterans. So to make it available in every geographic area of the state, I'm going to maybe speak out of turn, but part of this initiative that you folks passed last year and the grants and the funding and those type of things that were made available through the military initiative truly do filter out of the commissioner's office and come down to us in a county level. How that funding process is going to work in the grant process, we're all in our districts working, and there's a committee that's been set up by the commissioner. This new initiative will add additional funds to that. I know down in southwest Minnesota, closest place I have for, or the nearest funds I have for, say, a homeless vet or a transient vet that's coming through my county, and to be able to put them up somewhere is to go to my local Legion. We're hoping through that grant, four or five counties can work together, and perhaps we can come up with something. In fact, I talked to Deputy Commissioner the other night. Is this something that you guys look at? It's an open box. It's really exciting if the funding's made available. So truly look into that. And those are the type of things that we can help more at that out-state level. That otherwise, the closest for me is the MACV and Mankato. It's a great thing, but that's quite a distance from Jackson. That's 90 miles, that 100-mile thing again. So it's all part of that planning process, but some of these new initiatives and the funding that are being made available will make that easier. That's a long answer, but I got a passion for what you just mentioned.
Sure. Other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to thank you, gentlemen, for the work you do on behalf of our veterans, especially with the budget constraints you've been facing. My question is whether we do have an adequate number of beds for the veterans in need of nursing home services presently, or whether there is a waiting list.
The answer to that is, to your first question, no, we don't have adequate space to take care of everybody. And the second part of the question, is there a waiting list? Yes, an extensive one. One of the initiatives that we'll be talking about, and this is, really isn't the place to do it, is that we have limited, very old facilities. We're dealing with buildings, as you know, that was an old soldier's home initially and has been expanded and worked on and fixed up. And we spend probably between $4 and $6 million a year just keeping that place open, which from a business standpoint, if this were a private enterprise, nobody could stand it. Because the cost of replacing these facilities with new, expanded, modern, beautiful facilities, considering the fact that the federal government makes available very substantial funds as matching grants, we could take that money and dramatically increase the facilities available to veterans in Minnesota if only we could make the decision to spend the money for the future. That's really what it boils down to.
But, and Mr. Greenberg, last year when you came in and made your bonding requests, mm-hmm. as I recall, part of the difficulty was that those matching funds are frozen or something's going on out in Washington where it wasn't really going to be possible for you on a number of your requests to be able to guarantee you would have federal matching funds.
That's one of the problems of the way we look at this. That was a short-term problem. And it is a problem that occurs from time to time. Federal government makes decisions about money just like the legislature does and like we all do in our own personal lives. That's over with. They've now allocated money for this year. And as a matter of fact, we're going to get another $1.5 million or $1.6 million, I think something like that, hopefully very shortly, in reimbursement for some money that the state spent in the past, out of that program. It is unburdened. The concept of getting the 65% match for new facilities here is a long-term process.
Right
at the moment, the state of California is taking the bulk of the money because they did what we should have done 10 years ago. They started a process of looking at building new facilities, and so they went to the federal government and asked for, I've forgotten what the amount is, $150 million, something like that. And so they're high up on the priority list. They've been getting the money, but we are getting money this year.
So some of the projects that we've allocated you money for in the past that you thought you weren't going to get matching funds on, now that you – now you will be able to get matching funds on those?
There's a priority list, and I have a copy of the sheet here. This is a list of priorities because all of the veterans' homes across the country participate in this program. Federal government makes decisions based on various criteria that's related to urgency, it's related to health and safety, things of that sort. We're going to get almost $1,600,000 as reimbursement for the emergency electrical adjustments that were funded by the state at our Minneapolis campus. That money is going to come back to us very shortly. Unfortunately, as you know, when money comes back, it doesn't come to us. It goes either into the general fund or into the bonding fund, depending upon where the money came from. Last year, we got back almost $12 million bucks, of which you gave us, the legislature gave us $2 million too, that we thought we were going to be able to use. This year, it looks like we're only going to get about $1.6 million back. They work down the list based on priorities, and the only way we're ever going to get any money for the building of new facilities in Minneapolis and in Hastings, which is where they are, or the building of Forest Lake or wherever it is, the only way we're going to get that is to get on the list. In order to get on the list, you have to know what it is you're doing. So for us to sit here and say, well, why don't we put ourselves on the list for $30 million, which would build us all the facilities we could ever use, why don't we put ourselves on that list? You can't just do it quite that way.
It takes long-range planning.
Exactly.
And then you wait in a queue at the federal level.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the only way you get into the queue is to do the study. We don't have the money to do the study yet, and hopefully we're going to be asking for that money to do the study at least.
Madam Chair, an example would be the Wilmer project, that the feasibility study, the funds were made available, that everything was submitted. We look at it all, but I'm just, you and I have had an opportunity to talk. Truly, we need to look at the future, but right now our emphasis needs to be on stabilizing the five that we do currently have and ensure that they're viable. That's number one priority.
I'd like to just see if there are any more questions about the base budget, because it is 9:30 and we were going to try and move on to the review of the Minneapolis home and the inspections there. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just did have one process question. I'm new to the committee this year. I'm a registered nurse myself, and I'm a veteran. So I'm very interested in what happens. My interest is very piqued by my colleague to my right here, and I wanted to speak about the extent to which nurses are involved in your process. The senator was talking about care given to wound care, which is very expensive because it comes after the fact. And I realize you're dealing with a sick population and people come in with those sorts of things. But in this one particular instance, bed sores are 100% preventable if you have sufficient staffing levels. So we either deal with a very expensive wound care treatment on this end, or we put money into preventative care. So I'm wondering, and this is again from a nurse's perspective, to what extent are nurses involved in coming up with some of your planning, and are they stakeholders in your decision-making group and helping to determine the base budget? Or could you speak to that, please?
I'd love to, Madam Chair, if I may. I would like to call upon another member of our transition team at this time, Pam Barrels, who is also the administrator at the Laverne home but is also a registered nurse, Vietnam veteran, with a lot of history with the homes, and perhaps she could answer that much better, RN to RN, than I could. I know the answer. It's yes, yes, yes.
Pam Barrels, Administrator Laverne. Madam Chair, thank you. Our nursing staff across the, I think all the, in all the homes, particularly the director of nursing, is involved. We go through our budget process with all of our key staff people, with all of our departments. But in nursing is obviously the biggest department, the primary department, and we work very closely with them. And obviously, as a nurse, I agree with you. It's that prevention and that professional practice, and we take a lot of pride in what we do in our homes. So, yeah, I support that wholly.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. Let's move on then and talk about the Minneapolis Veterans Home inspection. And,
Madam Chair, would you give us a minute to queue
sure.
up?
Sure.
And
this whole book in for the administration.
Huh?
We got this whole book from that.
I think.
And while they're doing that, I just remind you that we will not have our full time today because we go into session at 11. So we'll be trying to wrap it up, you know, 10 minutes or 5 minutes before 11. Maybe while they're queuing up also, I can just also tell the new members of the committee that in addition to additional funding for nursing staff last session, we gave the board money for them to be able to do some hiring of consultants for mock inspections and doing audits of their own financial records and things like that. And so there was a mock inspection done at the Minneapolis Veterans Home prior to the inspection that was done by the Department of Health in November. So when we talk about the inspection, we're really talking about inspections that have taken place. There was a mock inspection done, and then there was a follow-up mock inspection done a couple of months later. In addition, the veterans' nursing homes are inspected by the veterans, by the Veterans Affairs Department. It's a federal requirement. So there's a number of inspections when we're having this discussion.
You going full screen?
And we do have in your packet of information the Department of Health inspection, and we also have some information from the mock inspections that took place as well. Okay.
We're almost there, Madam Chair. I apologize. I believe we're queued up, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Again, thank you for calling us in. As we give an update now here in January of 07.
That's the round presentation. Did you get your memory statement?
We were working on this till nearly midnight last night to try and get it ready for you, so that's draft probably 6. But I can go ahead while Dan's getting that going. Needless to say, there's no one more disappointed than the team that we have assembled here today with the unacceptable results of the last survey. And what we would like to do, as we did last year with your committee, is discuss some of those problems and discuss some of the solutions that we truly feel over the last year and a half. There's been countless hours, and we've had, you know, some changes out at the Minneapolis facility. But some of the exciting part is the management team I introduced today, the full functioning of these committees within the board, the oversight, and as we knew last year, it was going to take some time. The repeats were the extremely disappointing. Are we ready? Okay. And I knew you had many new members on your committee, Madam Chair, so to try and ensure as we do that information is there, we do have the 5 homes, and I think it's important as we look at some of the problems that we're currently dealing with that we remember we're an agency of 5 homes. So the agency as a whole doesn't have a problem system-wide. We need to, we have been and will continue to focus our energies to the Minneapolis campus get that turned around. It's been a number of years. There's decades of development of situations and whatever out there. I think through the team that we're developing and the utilization of all the expertise we have through the agencies, we're going to get there. Laverne most recently had an inspection that's down in the southwest corner. Their most recent state inspection, zero deficiencies. Four of these can almost be considered models of the industry right now. Fergus Falls, their last inspection, they had two deficiencies. The survey before that, they had zero. You're going to expect something.
Oh, yes.
You're going to expect something. Hastings, we looked down at our domiciliary. Their last two inspections, the last one was zero. The one before that was two or three. I don't remember right offhand. So, again, another model. Silver Bay, a lot of work's been done up there. The new administrator up there has been doing some outstanding stuff. They have some additional new staff. Bottom line, the board was extremely pleased to get the report. Three deficiencies. And that's one of our older homes. The Silver Bay is an old elementary school. And so that's exciting. What we're here for today is to discuss the Minneapolis, but we need to remind each other and new members kind of thought it would be nice they could see the locations, but we are an agency of five homes, one needing some additional assistance and work.
It does happen to be your largest home, however.
Yes, ma'am, it does.
So, and, you know, we're not really here today trying to embarrass y'all. We just want to keep on this also. We have a responsibility to make sure that we're doing the things that we need to do on our end to make sure that we get it right.
We don't disagree. Just to look back a little bit, some of the key findings that came out in at our hearing last year, and again, to emphasize that the employees, the mission and the vision, there's a deep commitment, and that was addressed when the consultants were there and other individuals that come to our homes. We do get a lot of letters and whatever from the residents and residents' families in regards to the good quality care they receive. Overall, it was stated in that the quality of care is high level, and the staffing levels were felt to be expected, satisfactory within the facilities after we did the upgrade and got the additional funds to do the additional staffing in Minneapolis. Where we've been are countless hours in looking and the oversight and transition of management teams and people. Our Senate hearing last year is March 1st when we were here, where we showed some of the things that were going to be implemented, the projections and trying to put the staffing levels where they needed to be, building bridges with the organizations that represent our staff, bringing in the right resources to try and start rectifying some of the problems. Over that, during that time, we've had changes in the Minneapolis home from the management standpoint. During that time, we've had two interim administrators, two interim directors of nursing, numerous other nursing management changes. The stability of the management is definitely part of that problem. The board, without doubt, has accepted that responsibility of governance that the HDI report was so very vivid in pointing that out. The new committee structures, I feel, and I believe the board feels the same way, as well as our staff, the Special Review Committee, the Finance Committee, and the Quality Assurance Committee have become very active, and they are truly functional. But our current status and what we were excited to bring on our team here so that you could actually see their faces. The current permanent management team has been there but for a few short months. Mr. Wicken, the CEO administrator out there, came on board in July. Carol and Jim, who we introduced earlier as assistant administrators, came on in October. During that interim transition, there was no assistant administrators midway through. Margaret Sukraj, our director of nursing, and Margaret, if I got that wrong, I'm sorry, actually accepted the full-time position of the director of nursing. She worked as one of the interims during that period of time in December. even through the crisis. The commitment and passion of these four individuals, as well as the team that they have out in Minneapolis, is inspiring for us, and we realize they have not had the time to put the processes and the systems and to work with all the individuals, but they already are. Knight and the roles and responsibilities of each and every area are being addressed, are being discussed, and looked at. The reporting structures that are being put in place to ensure that the supervisory level as well as the administrative level within the facility are a daily oversight and a weekly oversight in some of the reporting should benefit and assist. As far as the enhanced governance with the board and directors, I think we saw when Mr. Greenberg was up here from the financial standpoint, we have many of the things that have been put in place over the last 2 years, specifically within the last year and a half with these committees, the increased information that the board needs on a more timely basis to be able to look at some of those and ask those questions, the difficult questions at times. The data collection that is being done by administrators or nursing staff and other individuals in the quality assurance program gives us that opportunity on a routine basis to get some of those reports so that we can ask, well, how come? Or why? What are we doing? Are we overseeing this? One of the other things that's been implemented is the board packet includes resident and family council minutes. We see that as an opportunity. The resident and family councils are an opportunity for those individuals to express their concerns to our staff in those different facilities. But the board needs to be aware. And then we can be an oversight, and we can say, did you take care they're not happy with the food? Or did you take care of they feel that there should be another mirror in that bathroom? Some of those may seem little and small, but that is those people's homes. No different than if my lovely wife wants a new mirror in the bathroom. I have to address that. And that's the attitude that is trying to be taken. As we've already discussed with the through the budget process, Madam Chair, again, our thanks. It was a scary time waiting for these appropriation of those additional funds, and we appreciate the efforts of many people. I'm learning more about how this system works up here than I thought I ever would, but I know there's a lot of discussion that goes on to be able to provide the $6.2 million in appropriation that people were kind to do, that the legislators. Of that, $4 million was spent on the nursing and staffing requirements within the facility. We had the oversight with the mock survey. The remaining balance is on the next slide where those funds went. And some of that was with the resident workers minimum wage, the resident transfer equipment, and for the transfer equipment, meaning like some of the lifts needed to be replaced. We actually didn't have enough lifts, so some of those had to be purchased and get in place. The staffing increases in Minneapolis non-nursing. If you remember, we had some issues with peeling plaster and some of the things needed to be painted, so there was additional staff, painters, and those to be able to take care of some of those problems. Additionally, there was some additional staff increasing in Laverne, Hastings, and Fergus Falls. Every agency experienced, as well as us personally in our homes, the energy costs, and we were able to be assisted with that. Try and give some example to you, Madam Chair, and your committee, where we were at that staffing level in July 05. And the chart there, I mean, I'm just going to go to the bottom. I don't have to read everything for you. When we look at our total FTEs, where we were at in the Minneapolis home in the July 05, we were at that 207.8 FTEs. Thanks to the appropriation that was made available to us and the reevaluation of the staffing needs out at the Minneapolis campus, we ended up with the 252.6, which was the difference or the variance, I guess, increased staffing levels there to try and do something to ensure that the resources and the staff were available to assist with the care needed was an additional 44.8 FTEs that were added. As Mr. Greenberg mentioned, the appropriation itself, and we had to go into some other line items to come up with an additional $500,000 to be able to make that all happen. One of the things I, as a former administrator and as a board member, you know, we always want to bunch everything together, and we need to peel back the onion, and that's been done so much this year. I think we're on our third bag of onions. But one of the things, 35 citations, but what we really do need to look at, these are two separate entities, NCU being the skilled nursing facility with their own inspection, and then we have the domiciliary that had their own inspection. But as a board member and the other board members and these committees, well, where were they all? Were every single 26 of them a direct resident care issue? And knowing that we're coming here today, I think you folks want to know that. You are the overseers. There was one in financial, dietary activities would be like your recreation director, activity area, environmental, social services, and nursing. Some of those are, and Pam, if I may, double tags or whatever they call them. I've been out of the business a while. I'll have one of them address cross tag. Thank you very much, Mr. Cox. And then in the domiciliary, some of the issues, I mean, they felt there should be locks on the doors. There was concern that the conjugal visits weren't given enough emphasis and that we should make better facilities available for conjugal visits. So as we break those areas down, I just thought that would help. I know it helped me as I look through that big survey.
Well, and I think, Mr. Johnson, my big concern is in the area of nursing.
Totally agree. And that's where
most of the citations were.
By far, the most distressing or disappointing of the survey, because we know a facility of that age and that size with that many, but you're going to have citations. You know, I went to the State Health Department's website, and you can look at all the different homes. Everybody gets citations. That's part of the reason. I look at the health department as unpaid consultants. They come and help show you areas that you need to be increasing activities or increasing or changing some of your process. So, without a doubt, it's the repeats.
Just for the information of the members, the Department of Health is not required to do an inspection of the veterans' homes. Under state law, they are the responsibility of the Veterans Administration. But because of the situation that had developed, they agreed that they would be doing at least an annual inspection of the Minneapolis home until such time in the future as we see things are moving on a more acceptable level. So they don't get reimbursed for doing that Minneapolis inspection from the federal government. They're absorbing the cost of that. So,
Madam Chair.
Yes,
Madam
Senator Sharon.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
If it's off the subject you want to focus on, just let me know because I can hold it for another time. I'm looking now at what are we now? Where are we now? And I'm seeing a number of subjects about reduced urgency, nursing support based on resident acuity. And so my question is, I was listening to you, in the area of nursing where the significant number of issues seems to be, what is the nature of the shortcoming that's being identified there? Is it simply shortages, or are there other issues related to ongoing assessment, early identification of bed sores, for example, interventions of a quality nature that are on the preventive, there's either a shortage of nursing or that plus inadequate assessment in order to determine what the needs are and intervene in early?
Madam Chair, Senator, everybody's looking at me to answer that, so I suppose as the healthcare personnel, from reading the report, two of the major areas that the Department of Health surveyed for changed over the last year, the how they surveyed, and that related to skin integrity and urinary incontinence. In the past, basically, nursing homes were, in a nutshell, expected to turn everybody every 2 hours and to check for urinary incontinence every 2 hours. And the Department of Health expects nursing homes now to do a tissue tolerance. In fact, does to evaluate every single resident that is dependent and make sure that maybe they need to be repositioned every hour, or maybe they can go 3 hours. They need that assessment. And in the urinary incontinence, they need to be, we do a 3-day evaluation. We do hourly checks on their, on, you know, what's going on with their bowel and bladder function. And then we do an assessment and put those things into the care plan. Those changed, and a lot of nursing homes, that's what they're getting cited on. Not that they're not doing it, but that that assessment part isn't to the degree of documentation that, that should be in that care plan. So part of it is that, and not necessarily that they're not getting the care, but that we're not meeting the standard of complying with assuring that they're getting the appropriate care. Does that make sense?
But these problems with skin integrity and bladder care and the treating of infections that have resulted from inadequate skin integrity showed up in the mock survey that you had at Minneapolis, the first one, and the resurvey, and it showed up in the Department of Health survey. So, I mean, I think we really need to focus on the fact that that you know, some of the things that need to happen are just not happening in terms of the cares that are needed.
Madam Chair, part of that, and please, anything that we discuss today, we're wanting to get to the bottom of this, and none of this is intended in any way to be an excuse. So, but with the transition of leadership and a new permanent management team in place, a fresh set of eyes that have never been within the VA healthcare system, but these folks have come in, and in a short period of time, some of the things and the processes and the review of the systems and everything, it has taken place from day one. They're working with their staff at each level. I think we will have things in place. I know we will have things in place. I feel that confident in what I've seen, what the committees have seen already in a short period of time that they've been there, that we will have that oversight. We will have those reportings, as one of the previous slides. Those type of things are going to be coming back to these managers, to those supervisor levels, so that we can ensure that someone's watching the shop. And I think... That being said, the reason this slide is in here, Madam Chair, is to kind of readdress some of those issues, some of those cultures, some of those habits, whatever the proper word is, that have been long-term at the facility. Developing the staffing improvements definitely had to help. The contract nursing is much reduced than what it was last year. Staffing. More direction is being placed on resident acuity. What is the level of care needed? Because that, and Pam can address that if need be, but the acuity level really is going to have an impact. How many people do we have that require that bladder and the bowel care every 2 hours? How many of them do we need to bathe and get all those type of things done? Use of mandation, very pleased that the use of the mandation for the nursing staff has decreased. None of us want to work or be mandated to work, and that's decreased. The increased meetings, I feel that we've tried developing this whole team, the family, and that's from the heart. And that's everybody means that. Those aren't just key words to try and use, but trying to work with the labor representatives, and meeting with them out at the Minneapolis home, switching from a quarterly to a monthly basis to ensure that the concerns are brought forward, and if need be, then they can get to the board level if that requires additional funds or if that requires additional equipment. So those decisions can be made on a timely basis. Implementation of the employee console out at the Minneapolis home to ensure that it was truly an active group. So at every level, maintenance, HSTs, our every employee has an opportunity to be part of the process, to be part of the team, part of the solution, quite frankly, but they need to be heard. And I want to know that. I came up through the ranks. I want to know I can be heard if there's a problem or if there's a suggestion. I think that has shown, and the next slide, I think, shows it so well. That's exciting to see that the differences in the turnover rates that we've seen in just a year, less than a year and a half. Utilization of some of the good websites that are out there, and it's an electronic age, but we can look and from MAHA get reports, what is the average turnover rates outstate? What are the average in the metro area? These figures on the left side there show the Minneapolis home, RN, LPN, and HSTs. And as you can see, they're way below, they're far below the outs and the metro. One of the things, and I don't have those readily available, but I remember them because we discussed them at that meeting, those are so different. The change that just took place in our turnover rates tells me must be getting to be a better place to work. The process that's being used to hire individuals to get them into our facility and look at and professional and the education, they must feel more comfortable in the work environment because we don't have the turnover rates. That's a good sign.
It is a good sign.
And the continuity of that care.
I'm glad to see that it's improving. It should be expected, however, because nursing homes across the state in the private sector are they are not able to offer pensions. They are not generally, in many cases, not able to offer health insurance benefits. And the health insurance benefits, if they are able to offer them, are not very good benefits. So we have a lot more going for us in the veterans nursing home system in order to be able to attract and retain workers, I believe. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Considering that it wouldn't appear that these problems are caused by a lack of adequate staff in terms of numbers, just because of what you said based on your numbers in comparison to other nursing homes. And from the quick review that I've looked at through the survey that you've given us, it seems that a lot of these problems or a lot of these citations are specifically related to things that deal with nursing care, like bed sores and that type of thing. So what I'm wondering is if you've tracked whether these citations are related to specific personnel, if they tend to be problems with specific personnel, certain nurses more than others, or if they're more general and across the board. And I guess that would help me to have an idea whether this appears to be a specific personnel issue or if it's more of a systems issue or a management issue or what it might be.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, one of the concepts that we truly try to work with is accountability at every level. We have never, nor do we want to just, that's to blame, this is to blame. So the system and the processes truly have to be looked at. Through that process, are there going to need to be changes, additional education, additional discussions? Yes. Staffing levels, we can compare staffing levels, but then with this, the team, the leadership team, what we call the five administrators, with their directors of nursing, with the human resource people, statistics can be statistics. What are our true needs? And let's justify those. But then let's step up accountability at the board level, at our board office level, at every level. I don't know if that answers your question, Senator.
Well, and I'm not sure that it really does.
I have a background in employment law, and so I don't know whether there are bad employees there who are causing more than their share of these problems or not. I guess that's just the question that I'm asking.
Madam Chair, Senator, the Minneapolis team did specifically look to see if there was any area. They looked where the residents were found. They looked on the different. There's in Building 17, there's five different nursing units. And in Building 6, there's three. And then there's the domiciliary. So there's a bunch of different unique nursing units. And they tried to look to identify if, in fact, it was in one general area. And it was pretty much widespread. So hopefully that answers it a little more specifically.
Sure. Thank you.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question is just a general question about the survey team that did come in for the inspection. Is it the same survey team that does all the surveys throughout Minneapolis and all other nursing homes, or was it one just specifically out of the Department of Health for the Veterans Home? How did that work?
Senator Rosen, we'd have to get that from the Department of Health, and I don't know that they're here. I mean, we didn't ask them to come to this hearing. I realize, you know, that there might be questions about that, but because of the amount of time we had for this hearing today, I didn't ask them to come.
Mm-hmm.
But we can ask the staff to follow up and send you a memo on that.
Madam Chair, my question is,
I'm assuming it's a standard team that they had.
A standard team that does.
I mean, they wouldn't have created a special team for this project. And I'm assuming it's a team that normally would do inspections in the metro area.
Madam Chair, I'd like to have that information.
Sure.
Senator Olson, and actually Senator Rosen, if I may follow up with Senator Olson as well. The survey team and the makeup, where they were from, for example, St. Cloud or different areas, we can get that to you, and you can see the background of it. The lead surveyor happened to be a person that was on the survey team last year and saw the comparison in the environment as well. Senator Olson, if I may, Senator Berglund.
Yes.
I've got a background that's kind of almost a mutt, from turnaround to quality improvement and Six Sigma. One of the things that the management team did is they went and said, we have these citations. Is there anything that we can dispute with? So the citations are factual. Okay, what do we need to do to correct it? And in looking at the process, it's, you know, how do we correct it? How do we assess? Do we have employees that need to be trained? Is there follow-up that's needed and monitoring? And so what happens now, we've already seen some initial steps in process improvement where we have an individual that may neglect something on a care plan, for example. And then you take that opportunity to say, well, was the process in place? Was it followed? If not, why not? You take that to correct. And then that's the way that you identify, well, do we have a discipline problem or do we have a training problem? So that's one way. The other thing, the new management team that came in started talking about some best practices in the industry. For example, Administrator Wicken talked about something that's going on down in Rochester. It's almost a paging system. So you have these timers. So, well, it's time to rotate someone. It's time to check someone. And it goes off. If the first level does not respond, then it's escalated to the supervisor. If no response there, then it's escalated. So we're looking at technology as well. So, yes, we're addressing the performance. We're addressing roles and responsibilities and performance improvement at the same time.
Madam Chair, that's when Dan mentioned that we were going to get to that, hopefully to be able to part of that discussion. Some of them techniques and the resources we want to make available, not as necessarily just a truly an oversight, but to make the benefit for our employees to be able to have that time to provide that care. That bladder ultrasound, I'm excited as I can be about where we're going to get the potential money for that. And we've already talked to V4V, which is a new group, the possibility of some grant funds that they're going to have. Right now, I believe, and Margaret, we have two of those bladder ultrasound only available on the Minneapolis campus. That's a big campus. Well, how much do they cost? And I really don't care how much they cost. We will get them. Margaret thinks she needs six more so that is readily available. for that staff person to be able to go into a resident's room and do that bladder ultrasound to see if that bladder is full, what type of things need to be done. Some of the residents, we all know that. Once you reach a certain age, you may not respond appropriately. You know, if they'd say, are you going to be awake? I don't know. My wife asked me that, what if you're going to get up? And I'm excited about some of those fresh eyes coming in, looking at it, saying, we need these tools. The board has been saying that. What resources do you need? I'm not scared to come and talk to the senators and say, you know what? We were hoping we didn't need more money. And we've talked about that in your committees and in the budget process. We need to look at what do we truly need. We cannot continue, as you've already mentioned, Madam Chair, the 4 years with little or nothing, so we need to fix that. What Mr. Williams brought up on this paging system, I can't wait for them to get me that literature. As we did in Fergus with this lift system that we had to go through, what do you call them? They wouldn't let us do it, so then you had to have a sample program. Yeah, the concept itself. That is a dramatic benefit, and I want to see that in our other homes because so far the health department's been very pleased with it. Our staff is extremely pleased, but our work comp issues have decreased. But the biggest thing with that is the resident care. There's more dignity involved with moving them to the rest facilities, so we need that in every home. This paging system will be a valuable tool for that staff person that all of a sudden has two residents that is an incontinent issue, and now all of a sudden it's the two-hour time, and I'm supposed to be taking resident number three, and I'm trying to take care of it so that there is that triggering system. I'm excited about that. It's a valuable tool.
Well, I think, you know, some of the ideas you have about technology and ways to improve accountability in the system are good. I still kind of have some basic questions. If your staffing is similar in all of your homes and your resident acuity is similar in all of your homes, which I don't know if that's true or not, but you're not having these kind of problems in your other homes of, you know, skin integrity and bowel and bladder cares, and yet we are seeing it in Minneapolis, and hopefully there's things that you can do with technology to improve the situation, but, you know, it's kind of hard to understand why this is happening in Minneapolis and you're not having the same problems in your other homes.
Yes. Senator, we have a question. I would like to go back to a reference that you made to Six Sigma. And this really follows up on Senator Berglund's. I think the analysis of the system and this question of whether or not it's focused on a particular person or not requires root cause analysis and a whole involvement of the team, including the nursing staff, in the process of being involved in identifying when these factors emerge, what the stimuli, what is it that is creating, and what then is the plan. Then what is the benchmark, and what is it that you're going to be feeding back to the nurses about their outcomes so they're engaged in the process of resolving the problem? My question really is not the solution that you've come up with, like buying new technology or something, but what assurances are we given that those systems are being put in place in which you measure whether or not you've analyzed effectively the system-wide changes that need to occur, that they're engaged in, and that they are creating the outcome change that you want.
Senator Berglund, Senator Sharon, while we are not implementing a Six Sigma system in Minneapolis, fortunately, we do have a person, Carol Gilbertson, that's also very familiar with total quality management. And so we are looking throughout the entire organization, getting down to the root cause, and whether that is training, whether it is environmental, whether it is a degradation of the patient's ability. And then the feedback coming from the HST level, from the dietary level, goes into, okay, is this an isolated incident that's going to go away because there's some abnormality, or is there a systemic problem in the process that we have here and we need to address that, or do we need to move the patient in another way? So what we're doing at a board level, we meet this transition team right now. We meet telephonically every day when we can meet in person to say, how are we doing system-wide? What do we have as best practices in some of the other homes? As we speak now, we have a person from Laverne working with the Minneapolis staff addressing, what is it, bowel and bladder? Did I get it right? B&B, to say, okay, what best practices are there that would be portable from Laverne to Minneapolis? Are they indeed scalable? So we are doing that to say, okay, now have we identified the root cause? Have we determined that that is indeed the root cause, and what's the corrective action plan? So while we're addressing the citations, saying we have to address those, we have to solve the problem, and then let's also address our system along the way. So fortunately, when I start talking about Six Sigma and CMM, Carol says, yes, I know what you mean. So that's where we are.
Madam Chair,
yes,
and I don't think I was trying to be polite. I didn't answer your question as far as how come those four model homes out state, we're not having those same problems than we do in Minneapolis? I think part of it is we got to have a management team like we've currently been very fortunate to recruit in and to stabilize and give individuals an opportunity to do all this analysis and root cause and where are we at, and then ensure that individuals truly know what's expected of them and that there will be that criteria developed so that we do have that oversight. What we've done and made readily available to that new management team is our entire agency, administrator from Silver Bay or whatever Bob needs, to come down on a daily basis. Pam called me last week as we knew we were going to be up here. I've been up here nearly the entire week. She says, how about if I bring up my bowel and bladder specialist and help their staff to look at the different things? You bet. If she can get away, let's do that. To share all the resources. We're a big agency. But why do we have different things going on? We need to standardize some of those cares, and then the system, we can oversee it much better too. The other thing that I'm extremely pleased, the relationships that have been developed over the years with the VA hospital across the way. Mr. Kleinglass called me. He said, Jeff, I want to make available to you whatever we can do. And the education aspect, when the VA survey, you know, those were back-to-back, nearly a week apart. One of the things that they thought we should give more emphasis to, or at the time we were short-staffed because of the recruiting and the way all that works, getting somebody in the state system, in the education department. At no cost, he's willing to afford us some time of his educational team and some of the things that are already developed and share those with us. So developing that, I like to call it the system-wide, the commissioner's office and looking at the SSAP program. That's a program we could have been using. As Mr. Greenberg mentioned, we need to look at that dental care. But Minneapolis is the only place we're really doing the full dental care other than the initial dental exam and whatever. The SSAP program, which is a state soldiers assistance program, readily available to any veteran, but it's all income and asset based. We can start applying for that. Those veterans will get the care, that the dental care that they need, but we're using a system that's already, and the funds that have already been appropriated by the legislator, and that's what it's there for. So those type of things to look at. So part of it is finally getting some stability to a decades-old problem, ensuring that individuals at the HST level all the way up to the supervisory level know that their message can be heard. But on the same token, have an administrator and administrative staff that can give, this is our policy, and this is what we need to adhere to, and we are going to have this oversight, and if we have problems, we need to get together, we need to work on them, and if we have problems like Senator Olson said, then they have to be dealt with, no different than any other business. Outstate, they have smaller homes. Many of those individuals are caring for people that were their neighbor or a loved one. So the mindset's a little bit different, too. We'll get there. I really feel we'll get there.
Okay. Well, let's go over the vacancies page here because I think that may be a factor. I don't know.
Madam Chair, we have Nancy Dahl here with us today, and Nancy's got long history as our HR. Also went out to the facility during the initial time out there to assist with some of the nursing. Would you care to try and answer that from a recruiting standpoint and a cause? Nancy, thank you. Trying to get you the right answers, not have to come back. So that's why we brought as many of our specialists. You sure can.
Madam Chair, committee, as of the last vacancy report that I had available to me to prepare for you today was the 2nd of January of this year. And at that, when I did the calculating out of the system, the statewide system, we have 5.6 FTEs of RN coverage that we're lacking, 1.6 FTEs of LPN, 9.3 HSTs. We do have two nurse manager positions for a total of 18.5. And I continue to work with the Minneapolis staff in interviewing. In fact, tomorrow I'll be interviewing. I have 8 interviews scheduled for tomorrow. I'll spend my entire day interviewing for positions at Minneapolis.
So does the vacancy rate at Minneapolis run higher than at your other homes?
Yes, it does. One of the things that you have to consider is that at our other homes, we are one of the employers of choice in those areas. In most of those communities, we're second only to the school systems in those communities. So like in Laverne, we're one of the largest employers in Laverne. Silver Bay, we're definitely one of the larger employees, even with the mining system. Fergus Falls, I think, we're second to their school system and their other public employees. So in each one of those communities, we actually have a little bit of more. In fact, we've actually got in our Silver Bay facility, we actually have people, RNs, who we have a waiting list of RNs who want to come to work for us in Silver Bay. And you've got to realize Silver Bay, you all know Silver Bay is a long way away. And for years we've struggled with being able to have enough licensed staff up there. And we're really pleased. Recently we had a turnover in our nursing administration up there. And it's, you know, that, and they've, again, the same as Minneapolis is working on, they've gone to some best practice issues with a new set of eyes, a new team in nursing up there, and we've been able to attract and actually have a waiting list for nurses up there.
Okay. Has there been any thought or discussion in regard to the kind of continuous vacancy rate in Minneapolis then, looking at, you know, dealing with it from a management perspective of trying to overhire?
Exactly. Exactly. And at one time, I've been around in the state system a long time, and at one time we could double on our what we call position control numbers. We could double fill on those position control numbers. And as Mr. Greenberg is much more articulate budget-wise than I am, but we're having enough trouble with the funding for what we've got, let alone add for the overfill. What we do know is that, for instance, from the time Doerr has put in a new system, and I believe I spoke about it the last time, the Resimex system, which is their current hiring system, or the how we get our candidates, people apply into that system. Prior to having the Resimex system, and in we have reduced, it was taking us about 140 plus days from the point that we posted a position based on the requirements of the contract to the time that we were able actually to start somebody. We've now reduced that to our latest, particularly, and I will just comment on RNs, is 48 days. And that's from the time we post, and we have a required posting by contract, which allows our internal candidates, if they would like to move or increase their FTE, it allows for internal movement before we go out to the outside. So, yes, we have had quite a bit of discussion, in fact, in the last 6 weeks about how many positions, based on our turnover, based on our leave rate usage, based on the number of individuals that we have going on military leave, which now, unfortunately, are extended leaves, you know, what? How many FTEs would it take us to be able to add to our mix to be able to have those? We also took to overhire. We did take a certain number of positions and tried to create an internal pool with what we call intermittent positions. Those are people that are available if we call them on the phone to be able to come in to fill if we've got an unexpected medical leave or an absence or whatever. What we do not promise with an intermittent status, we don't promise that individual any specific or guarantee any number of hours. So people can't function that way. They need to know how many dollars they've got to work with in their own family budget. So we very often, and when you, there is a slide that's available somewhere that talks about, and the slide I picked was the one on RNs and the reasons that some of the RNs are leaving, and you'll see that it's not available or non-active intermittent status, I believe was what I titled it. Those are the number of people that we hired trying out that system, but those people were not available. They couldn't remain available because they had to have other employment to survive.
Ms. Dahl, one of the things you said to answer my question that I didn't understand is that you can't do overhiring because of the budget.
Well,
now, as I understand it, you have the budget to fill these positions.
We have the Yes, we have them to fill the positions, but we
and
don't.
If you continually have vacancies, then you would be underspending, so to speak.
You're exactly right. It's a fine line to interrupting the cycle of paying overtime and using outside agency to have that money to hire, to have those people available. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I think, you know, that dealing with reducing the number of vacancies in the Minneapolis home would certainly have some relationship to the quality of care that's being given there.
Mm-hmm. And we certainly, Madam Chair, have not ruled out the possibility of adding some positions because what we're doing is just getting a handle on what is the projection of those. Are our projections going along so that we can take those dollars that aren't being used to pay for those additional positions?
All right.
Madam Chair, if I may, I think the other thing that will be beneficial, if we can maintain and keep the same turnover rates that are on that previous slide, hopefully these numbers will stay a little lower. I'm thinking back to last year, and we were both here. Those numbers were much higher.
Yes.
I don't have those exact, but I'd like to think that as things proceed and progress.
Obviously, retaining people is an important component of it. But, you know, if you have a home that's in an area where people have a lot of other employment opportunities available to them, you're probably just going to always have a higher turnover rate than you do in some of your other facilities.
Madam Chair, just looking at some of our demographics of our employees in the last year, our average age of our employee within the state, within our system, is 47 years old. And the average age of our resident is not much more than that, and we were trying, one of the other staff members and myself were trying to figure out a formula because we believe in the not too distant future the average age of our resident and the average age of our employee are going to be the same. And we don't think that's going to be because we've got the Vietnam, the Iraqi vets coming in. Our nurses, the average age of our nurses is I believe, 40-plus years old. It's 45, I think, in the RN alone. We have some employees that are doing direct care that are over 65 years old. We have some staff members that are 70 years old doing direct care. Those are things we have to, and that's why when we get into these discussions, we have to be looking at technology, even though that's not the ultimate answer. We have to be looking at how are we going to create a work environment where our people can continue to work and we can use their experience and their longevity and their years of knowledge, because we've got some very valuable nurses. Our licensed nurse staff is an aging workforce.
And that is true throughout the state.
Exactly. I think if you would go to the Minnesota Board of Nursing and look at their demographics, we've got more nurses retiring than we've got entering the workforce. And that's a key piece for us.
Madam Chair, the other thing that I think is a little different for the veterans' homes is the fact that civilian home, 8 hours RN. Can you want to explain that? And the VA requires we have 24/7 RN coverage.
Oh, yeah, the community.
That's a big impact also.
The veterans' home, in community nursing homes, the regulations don't require 24-hour RN coverage round the clock. With our VA, we're always held to the higher standard, and in our particular case, the higher standard is the Veteran Administration or the federal standard, which does require registered nurses around the clock. The other thing that I think, even if the standard didn't require it, and I'm going to just ad lib here, and somebody may kick me under the table, but I'm going to say it. Minneapolis is a huge facility. There's no way, even if the requirement is that we have one registered nurse. We have multiple buildings, multiple floors in that facility. There's no way that we would have one registered nurse in that building at night. That's not good business. And so what we end up doing is we add, because we need to have covered. And that's some of the things that some of our registered nurses have shared with us at meetings that we've had and that we've taken into consideration and are saying, yes, we agree. We need to take the resources we have and redistribute them so that the right person is in the right place at the right time doing the right job. If you look at the deficiencies, a lot of them are assessments. And those of you who are nurses, only registered nurses do assessments. We need to reroute how work is done in our organization to make sure the nurse is available, has the time, and is available to do and use the skills that they have, and they're entitled and they're responsible.
We're getting close to the time when I was hoping we would take the other testimony. So if you wanted to finish your presentation quickly.
I'd love to. I'm just going to whip
through. Plow through it, okay. Right on.
So that's where we're at now. And some of the actions have been taken. I think we've been saying that. The mock surveys will continue. One of the things that will be addressed at our next board meeting, which is next Thursday, we still have, with that contract, mock surveys that are taking place in Laverne, Fergus. Is that really necessary? Or can we put those two inspections that have already been contracted and focus those energies into Minneapolis? That's going to be our recommendation from the transition team, that if Laverne's sitting there with zero deficiencies, Fergus has had that, then maybe we can use those resources to help and assist with some additional oversight within that Minneapolis campus. We've already discussed the finance, quality assurance, and the special review committee, and as they mature through the process, the oversight continues. We'll continue to develop the reporting requirements, and I think Mr. Greenberg mentioned the benchmarking. That's still a project in motion. They haven't really gotten a final document, but they work on that, and they've been working on it at least every other week in between everything else that's going on, and I think that's going to be a valuable tool for all of us. The special review committee will continue to monitor the Minneapolis turnaround as we have over the period of time. The management team out there, of course, will be in weekly, at least, with the transition team. And once we get to the point, the special review committee will continue the process as they have of the oversight. We're currently, as you're aware, in a national search to fill our open executive director position. We've had interviews in process. We're hopeful that we can get down to where we have two what we feel viable candidates to have the full board interview of a couple of candidates to look at. We have run into some things there as far as the scope of the position and the requirements by legislation that they be a veteran. The agency and staff, of course, continue to evaluate, as we've talked here, and prioritize and implement some of those things. A big part of it is let's get ownership at every level. Let's let input from every level. Let's come up with a solution that we can all live with. And if we do that from the grassroots all the way to management, everybody can buy in because you were part of coming up with the solution. I'm a firm believer in that. Any additional expertise, as we said, we'll share from facility to facility. I think that's important. And what it does also is develop that network. So if an RN, director of nursing in Fergus, all of a sudden needs to mentor with perhaps Minneapolis, and that will eventually happen. Margaret's and Carol and some of the staff there can help them, and we can get some more standardized processes in place, and at least they know they're not alone. That's not a good place to be. Developing the benchmarks, I think, is going to be key. We'll continue to develop some of that board reporting mechanism that allows us the opportunity to, in a timely basis, be able to ask some of the difficult questions or at least have the knowledge of certain situations that are going on, sentinel events and whatever, in the different facilities. So most definitely, Madam Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's unacceptable. We think we have the right things being developed in process in these few short months. Some of the other exciting technology that this will get turned around. It's going to be a lot of work with everybody at every level to take and say we're all in this together. That being said, again, the veterans organizations are another watchdog for us. We have worked with the American Legion Rehab Committee as probably a committee that many of us are aware of. They travel the state. They look at the homes. They look at the VA healthcare facilities. They even go to the community-based outpatient clinics. We've tried to keep them informed, the veterans organizations as well as the legislators. We want to be transparent. We want this fixed probably worse than anybody else so we can get back to a routine where our regular lives. The board has put a lot of hours into this. There's a passion at every level, and that's the feeling that keeps us moving, knowing that we can make some of those changes. The initiative, as Mr. Greenberg and you've heard us mention, and I don't mean to use your committee here as trying to gain support or an advertisement for that initiative. I think, as Senator Coring has said, that's going to be extremely valuable for us. I'll be greedy. That $8 million could go a long ways towards the different things we've talked about here today. So I hope we answered the questions. We tried to anticipate some of the questions from last year's hearing. We have a hearing next week with Senator Vickerman's committee. We'll fine-tune some of the things that the questions that we didn't think of that your committee has asked. But most assuredly, if there is anything, we want to make ourselves readily available, whether it be the committee level or if you have a question in some of the materials, please contact us. We want to get that answer to you. We're in it together.
Well, I do want to commend the board on the engagement that they have stepped up to the plate for since the original terrible inspection came forward at the Minneapolis facility. I do believe that you are putting in an enormous effort, and I think everyone is grateful for that. Again, however, you know.
Results.
We need results, exactly. Does anyone have any more questions for the board at this point in time? If not, thank you. We do have some folks who want to testify. Paul Thien, Margaret Skoy, and Carol Dimert, Mary Jo George. Maybe we can get folks up to the table.
Once again, thanks, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Jo George with the Minnesota Nurses Association, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I am the government affairs representative, and I just want to say briefly, the Minnesota Nurses Association does represent about 20,000 registered nurses statewide, and approximately 700 of those are working in our state service in such areas as mental health, corrections, and, of course, at our state veterans home. Joining me today are two nurses at our veterans home, Paul Tyne and Margaret Skoy, and our nursing practice specialist, Carol Dimert. Again, we want to thank you for holding this follow-up hearing on the quality of care concerns at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Undoubtedly, like yourselves and the Vets Home Board, we are deeply, deeply disappointed with the results of the second survey showing substandard care. Unfortunately, and fundamentally, however, I think we disagree with the Vets Board's perspective on what the problems are out at the Vets Home. We continue to believe that we are suffering from a nurse staffing crisis. And the reason why, in terms of historical perspective, we had testified that there were numerous nurses that were leaving. In 2005, we had 27 licensed nurses, RNs and LPNs, leave after the first inspection. We testified to that in 2005 and 2006. We were worried about the overuse of mandation, and I would agree with the board's assessment today that we aren't seeing as much mandation. But we thought the legislature and the governor responded by appropriating the $4 million. However, we felt we needed language, which we got with the leadership of Senator Berglund, that stipulated that they were to negotiate with the bargaining units on how to spend the money. And the language that we got in law was to say that it should be based on appropriate skill mix, which is the distribution of the RN and the LPN with the nursing assistants and the acuity of the patients. Our fear, which we feel has happened when I listened to the testimony today, has happened in that they have hired only nursing assistants. We did send them a letter on November 13th to ask them to comply with the law and negotiate with our organization, and they did. We were pleased to report that they did meet with us. Our first meeting was December 15th, and it makes sense to me now because at that meeting it wasn't clear at all what they were planning to do with the money. They didn't say, but now I find out today that it has been spent. And if you look on the page 8 of their nursing positions slots, it looks like they, as I said, have only hired 3.5 FTE of the RN. And we have put a proposal in place that is much more aggressive than that. And I think to your point, Senator Berglund, that we're sort of playing catch-up because our nurses are saying in 2002 they eliminated a really critical position of an RN senior position. And that person really helped to assess what was happening in terms of the direct care. And I'll have our practice specialist talk more about that. But I guess in essence, we just really feel that we are not working well together. We want to. They have told us they want to be strategic partners. But we do not quite at this point feel that we are really recognized as a true stakeholder in this process. And so, unfortunately, we're here again today to ask for more legislative pressure or oversight to have the board take us seriously in how we're going to address these issues. Because, as I said, we really don't believe the quality of care concerns will decrease unless we appropriately staff up. And at that point, I'd like to hand it to Carol.
Good morning. My name is Carol Dimert. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm a nurse and a practice specialist with the Minnesota Nurses Association. I have reviewed the latest survey report from the Minnesota Department of Public Health. And from a nursing perspective, The majority of the deficiencies cited are a direct result of a lack of number of RN staff available for assessment, direct care, oversight, monitoring, and supervision of unlicensed staff. Just for example, what we got this morning, it's like my calculations were the 40% increase in unlicensed staff and a 7% increase in RN staff. There's a limit to what RNs, the number of unlicensed people RNs can supervise safely. Our positions at the Minneapolis Veterans Home does not have an adequate number of registered nurses to care for this population. From the survey and a sample of 11 residents reviewed, there were 11 instances where the comprehensive skin assessments to prevent pressure ulcers and skin breakdown were not done, and this has been alluded to. In 13 of 30 residents reviewed for assessment to reduce and manage bladder and bowel incontinence, which is a major contributor to pressure ulcers. Those are very related. This was not accomplished. Important nursing assessment measures to reduce and prevent pressure ulcers are huge: mobility, nutrition, hydration, medication management, pain control, and resident choice, all requiring the time and skill of an RN. In many studies where RNs provided less care, in one particular, less than 30 minutes of direct care by an RN to residents in a skilled nursing facility, the increases in pressure ulcers, urinary tract infections, weight loss, and decreases in the ability to perform activities of daily living were substantial. And I have that study if anyone is interested. The residents in the sample from the survey who were at risk for skin breakdown most often had multiple medical issues also, like Parkinson's, diabetes, congestive heart failure, chronic renal failure, and cognitive and behavioral issues. In addition to multiple medical problems, the population characteristics of veterans we feel are unique. Male patients are generally taller and heavier, which makes safe patient handling more challenging for a primarily female nursing staff. In addition to the dementia issues often associated with age, many residents come to the facility with histories of severe emotional and mental health issues, which present behavioral challenges requiring particular knowledge and skill in their management. One nurse stated, "The mental health issues of a resident got in the way of reasoning. He was resistive, yelled, and screamed when I tried to reposition him." And we have anecdotes like that. So it's a challenging population. Adequate time and appropriate skill level is required to appropriately care for this population. Intensity of care needs may differ. For example, a stable comatose patient may require a large amount of low-complexity care, which may be largely provided by non-RN staff. Another patient, such as a newly diagnosed diabetic patient with cardiac problems who also has moderate dementia, may require fewer hours of care but need the skills of an RN. So numbers and types of nursing staff make a difference. Multiple studies show that without adequate RN staffing, the incidence of infection rates, pressure ulcers, falls, and even death result. The patient safety literature further documents that these increased rates of morbidity and mortality are most often systemic. The latest figures I've seen is like 96%. There are 16 places along a system where an error could occur before it gets to the end point. So that the failures are often more system culture rather than individual clinician failures. And that has been documented in Institute of Medicine report on Keeping Patients Safe 2004. So the solution needs to be at a system cultural level rather than any punitive corrective measures focused on individual frontline caregivers who are already struggling under the current system of staffing. Our position is that the Minneapolis Veterans Home does not have an adequate number of registered nurses to care for this population, nor for nurses to meet their legal and professional obligations under the Minnesota Nurse Practice Act, which is another concern of ours. This statute outlines nurses' obligations for assessment, developing individual plans of care, evaluating the care, and delegating and supervising unlicensed nursing staff. The Veterans Home just does not have enough RNs to provide this level of oversight for management of the care of the population at this facility. Thank you.
Continue?
Sure.
We'll see if we have time for questions at the end here.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for holding this second hearing concerning the quality of care crisis at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. My name is Margaret Skoy, and I have worked as a registered nurse for 21 years. the last 17 years as a full-time registered nurse at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. On September 21st of 2005, at the first Senate hearing concerning the Minneapolis Veterans Home crisis, I was given the opportunity to present my perspective. Today, I am here again to give my perspective on the latest quality of care crisis at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Leading up to the first Minneapolis Veterans Home crisis in July of 2005, the Minneapolis Veteran Home Registered Nurses Union Leaders and the Minnesota Nurses Association raised concerns about resident care and recommended solutions that were repeatedly ignored. After months of inaction, in desperation, a registered nurse alerted the state health department about the health care concerns on her unit. In July of 2005, the state health department cited the home with 31 violations. Soon after that survey, the first Senate hearing was held. The Minneapolis Veterans Home has a capacity for 420 residents, and the residents are predominantly male. In the days of past, our nursing home residents were admitted at the beginning stages of their chronic diseases. But due to community health support systems, are now admitted at the end stages of their multiple and chronic diseases. For example, profiles of our residents in the skilled nursing care units include an elderly, incontinent, blind, insulin-dependent diabetic with Alzheimer's disease. Another profile, elderly, end-stage Parkinson's resident, unable to communicate, feed, toilet, or reposition himself. Still another profile. An elderly, incontinent, insulin-dependent resident with post-traumatic stress syndrome and a hemiplegic. Today, I am here to inform you, as I did in the first Senate hearing, that we do not have enough adequate staff to meet the needs of our residents. A critical lack of registered nurses and nurses' aide still exists at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. The latest State Health Department survey of November 2006 cited 34 violations. 1.5 years after the first Senate hearing, we need to address this question. What changes have actually taken place? Number one, a very minimal increase in the number of nurses' aides. Number two, no increase in the number of direct care registered nurses. The Minneapolis Veterans Home Nurses and the Minnesota Nurses Association recommend hiring a charge nurse for each unit, whose responsibility would be to monitor the care on the unit through auditing, to be directly involved in the care planning for the residents, and to follow up on the needs of our residents. A significant result of September 21st, 2005 Senate hearing was that on June 2nd, 2006, the Minnesota legislature appropriated $4 million to increase the nursing staff at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We respectfully ask you to continue to pressure the Minnesota Veterans Home Board to improve the quality of care for our residents and to make transparent that the $4 million allocated to increase the number of nurses, aides, and registered nurses is indeed used for that purpose in order to improve the quality of care and the lives of our veterans. Thank you for holding this hearing, and if you have any questions, I would be very glad to answer.
We're going to hold the questions till we finish with all of the testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for your interest in holding this hearing. My name is Paul Tyne. I've been an RN at the Minneapolis Veterans Home for the last 10 years. I'm also the chair of our M&A bargaining unit. Pointing fingers is not constructive. In order to address the many serious problems on our campus, all involved parties will need to be transparent and solution-oriented. Since the negative Minnesota Department of Health survey in 2005, the focus has been on the corrections of the survey deficiencies, which is understandable. But before scrambling in all different directions, we should look at the focus. We should focus on the source of our problems. One glaring problem has been the monitoring of our units. On January 31, 2001, the RN senior position was eliminated. Since that time, no accommodations ever have been made to pick up those vital responsibilities of education, evaluation, training, and ongoing audit. The RN senior was a watchdog for the units. We can trace the decline of care to the removal of this position. Budget restraints have always been cited when this has been pointed out to all the different administrations we've had since then. Our nurses are working extremely hard to care for this challenging population of veterans. When nurses are not allowed to give their professional input and feel they do not have the resources or ability to render good care, their morale falls and they leave. Our home has suffered enormous losses with the departure of high-quality nurses and nursing leaders who have become disillusioned and departed. Those of us who do remain do so because of the relationships we have made with the veteran residents and their families. For myself, the expectation from these relationships can be troubling when I go home at the end of the day and feel like, once again, I wasn't able to get everything done. We continue to have unfilled RN positions and an overwhelming morale problem secondary to our frontline nursing staff not being set up for success with the current staffing ratios. We respectfully request your assistance for more RNs and HSTs to provide these veterans with the care that they rightfully deserve. Thanks again. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
I think we really are short of time for questions, but we appreciate your testimony, and if members do have questions, they can ask you before they leave the hearing room today. I also just want to let everyone know who's here today that there is a very serious discussion going on within the legislature about inflation and, you know, the fact that inflation is not forecasted. And then oftentimes, because it's not forecasted, is not provided in the state budgets. And so stay tuned to that discussion. I'm not sure it's entirely been resolved, but there is a recognition on the part of legislators that it is a problem. So thank you, everyone, for being here today. And we will be continuing, I'm sure, this discussion when we bring the Veterans Homes Board back before us for any change requests that they have this year.
Leave this thing
here. Means adjourned.
Take all the information with us, but they want to leave. And for preparing for next time.
Thank you.
Leave your notepad. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just to engage us.
We leave this, right?
Guys, yeah. Want
orientation to come anywhere. I think they asked us to sit, and then they put us down a second.
The 16th.
So we don't have something else.
Oh, sure.
Oh, jeez.
Good to meet you.
Do you want the address?
Oh, you can do it.
Do you want the address of the Minnesota?
Do you know, David, do we take this or is this left?
You leave that here.
Oh, okay.
So that
you
take everything out of it that you want. If you put something in there.
I'll keep this. You just fed me.
All right.
Thanks, Kate.
Winthrop, started changing the price.
Send me a
hey,
stuff.
Hey.
No.
In Winthrop. Oh, no, I'm not.
I guess stuff away.
She's just going to throw it away, right?
Oh, Senator?
Lyles.
Lyles, if you leave it in there, it's going to get thrown away. I guess there's a new
okay.
Oh, no, no, no.
I don't know. We're checking. Oh, if you leave it in, it gets thrown away?
No further
response.
I didn't speak to
let me finish.
In the last
everybody was
that would make sense.
three times they asked. Nobody got to talk.
Great job yesterday.
Tim Mike.
I didn't get anything. But we're here complaining today.
All right. And
I felt like the time I requested my train.
Well, you know, we're trying to help, but we can't help somebody don't get up and talk. And number two, it's a card.
The numbers.
All right.
No, haven't heard of that.
Yeah, Senator Berglund clarified that.
Well, they said that if it's something you really want,
you're going to figure out what's going on.
I know there's lots going on, but you know, we want to work with you.
The amount of paper that goes through this committee is phenomenal.
Maybe Carol and I would pull over them and then try to get to you. You know, have an appointment. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, we will get it.
Okay. Put too much in there.
I just was blown today.
Oh, and then you just all of a sudden
started negotiations.
I don't
forget it.
I know exactly what you're saying.
I'm not going to.